Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Francavilla Show. I'm your host, Dr. Carolyn Francavilla, board-certified family physician and diplomate of the American Board of Obesity Medicine. I've been helping patients lose weight to treat and prevent medical problems for the last 10 years, and I'm taking what I've learned from them to you. In this podcast, you will learn the science behind why you struggle with your weight and what to do about it, tips for common challenges, work to fight bias about what a healthy weight really is, and improve your relationship with food and your body. Please remember that while I'm a doctor, I'm not your doctor. This podcast is meant to be informational in nature only, not medical advice. Please seek out care from your physician for your specific needs. Okay, let's get started. All right. Well, welcome to this week's episode. We have a guest here today, Dr. Toh Wallawi, and she is going to talk to us about lifestyle medicine and plant-based eating. And she also has a children's book about this topic that we are going to talk about as well. And she'll introduce us to at the end of the episode. So make sure you stay for that so you can hear about that. How cool is that? Dr. Toh Wallawi is a mom, a family physician, a lifestyle medicine expert, and a plant-based physician. And she is double board certified in family and lifestyle medicine. Her goal is to help people live a healthier life by equipping them with knowledge to take care of their health. She's a published author and speaker. She leads workshops and webinars for children's, teens, and adults. She's the founder and medical director of Nurture Well Center PLLC in Washington State in the Seattle area. I think, right?
Yes.
It's Associated Med Spa Skin Stat MD, where she has her own physician formulated skincare line, which probably deserves its own podcast episode. So welcome to our episode today. So
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit about what lifestyle medicine is, and maybe so how you got involved in that, but what is lifestyle medicine?
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Dr. Francavilla, first off, for having me. But yes, a lot of people have no idea what lifestyle medicine is. And I love, you know, catching people up, putting them hip to the game, like I like to say. So lifestyle medicine really looks at six pillars, which I'll break down in a second, looking at these six pillars to prevent, treat, and reverse chronic diseases. And the six pillars are nutrition, so focusing on plant-based nutrition, but you don't have to be 100% plant-based. We'll get into that. Looking at stress management as a second pillar, physical activity, managing your stressors, reducing risky substances like alcohol and tobacco. And then last pillar is having healthy social connections. So using all those things, incorporating them into your daily life and into your treatment plans for patients, if you're a clinician, to really help them manage chronic disease like hypertension, obesity, prediabetes, diabetes, all the things that are very common in the United States. So using that approach. And the certification is only really, I want to say 8-9 years old. I got certified in 2021. So still a newish field. So it's really exciting. More and more people are joining, but it's really important to acknowledge that in order to be certified in lifestyle medicine, you have to have a primary certification either in internal medicine or family medicine like myself or pediatrics. So
You know, the physicians who are practicing lifestyle medicine, you know, they're family docs, internal medicine, maybe OBGYN, something else, but then they have done additional focus to look at the research, the evidence, and how we really use all the things in our lifestyle, right? Like you said, like sleep, stress, social connections, which I don't think we talk about enough.
Substance use,
and then nutrition with a focus on more plant-based nutrition in lifestyle medicine. And it seems, I think a lot of people assume that doctors know all those things and get education in it. And that is a fair assumption, but really I like that you're like laughing, right? Like that is not a big focus in our medical education. It's sort of like on the side, right? Where it's like, oh yeah. And lifestyle is important, but the education is not very in depth on what does that really mean? And how do we help people make those changes? And what are some of those priorities? It's just like, oh yeah. And lifestyle, right? Like, oh, we should all know. And if we all knew what to do, I think we would have a lot less health issues in our country.
Right. But I love that you said something very important that I didn't go over. Evidence-based, right? So all these things, a lot of people will say, oh, show me the evidence. Or yeah, whatever, you know, eating more Mediterranean diet is healthier. Sure, whatever. But there's evidence, there's studies that have shown where people have seen their diabetes reverse their pre-diabetes, not go into diabetes, right, by following even a more Mediterranean diet where that's more even seafood based, right? And how people who have community, there's this whole thing about the blue zones. There's a documentary on Netflix. I'm not sure if you heard of it, Dr. Rangavilla, on how there are these communities across the world where people are living to be in their 90s and they're healthy, right? And a yes. common theme is that they eat more plants. Maybe they eat seafood, but they also have community of elders who they can sit with and sip tea with and things like that.
Yes.
So it's so important.
Yeah, the blue zone. So the blue zone, I think, got a lot of attention maybe a couple years ago of places in the world where people just like live longer, right? Where they have people who often live into their 80s and 90s.
Right.
And what are some of the things they have in common? And actually the social connection thing, I think, is something that gets missed a lot, because one pattern that we sometimes see in these places is that they will often drink wine, right? And so there was the way some people had interpreted that with, say, the Mediterranean diet was that maybe there was a health benefit to wine. But what we've seen in more recent data is that there's probably not a lot of health benefit to alcohol, right? We're seeing more and more harms from alcohol. Probably for most people, there's not a health benefit. And what is probably going on is in these places that regularly will have a small serving of alcohol, often wine, is that there's a social connection going on, right? So it is a part of the day to sit with your family, sit with your neighbors, and have that community. And it's probably not the wine that is improving people's health. It's probably that community, right? Is that your interpretation of
that's,
that?
So that's that. And also I always tell people, you know, it's the phenols in the wine, which is coming from the grapes. Why don't you just eat the grapes, right?
Like, you could also just eat the grapes, right? And then some of the different compounds that have been identified in wine to really get those aging and antioxidant benefits, you have to have a lot of it, right? And so may not get the same amount. So, you know, if you're going to have wine, certainly moderation, but having it in a social context, right? Where you're not drinking at the end of the day because you're down and depressed and stressed out, and that's your stress reliever, but because you're getting together with a friend, a loved one, a neighbor, and you're being social and you're getting all the positive benefits from those social connections.
And you're sharing that bottle of wine too, right? I know I've had patients, I'm sure you have too, Dr. Brancabella, who are, they're having a bottle of wine by themselves at night because they're just trying to get the day off,
and
right?
Often those social situations, if they're positive ones, will sort of limit the amount of alcohol, right? Because, you know, people often are not on their best behavior when they've had that whole bottle of wine, but one glass might make you social, but three or four maybe are going to have negative social implications. So I didn't even know we were going to talk about all that. So,
that was great,
but
though.
The social connection, I think, is something that we actually haven't talked about on this podcast.
Yeah. It's so important.
It sounds like one of your focuses is on children and families and how to make these lifestyle changes. So when someone is trying to make lifestyle changes, whether it's plant-based nutrition or moving more, reducing stress, how can they do that as a family or engage children of different ages in that without sort of making like it a big thing or something that, you know, rubs their kids the wrong way or sets them up for eating disorders? How do we engage the whole family in this in a positive way?
Great question. So I'll kind of take three of the pillars you mentioned. So we'll talk a little bit about nutrition and then movement and even stress and kind of approach that. So first with nutrition, I always tell people you got to get your kids involved in the kitchen. So I have two kids, 5 and 7, right? And even when they were younger, around, let's say, 3 and 5, you know, I help mommy, you know, wash the fruits or help me spread, you know, the peanut butter, just getting them involved, making it fun. And then when you go to the grocery store with them, give them a role. So this week, I'll use their names. I am a day, what fruit do you want to try? Look around the fruit section. Let's try a new fruit. So they have that kind of ownership and around their choice, right? Same with my daughter. Shay, what fruit do you want to pick or what vegetable do you want to pick? So make it fun, get them involved early on are two things that I like to always kind of harp on.
Yeah, and kids love that, right? They like to be involved in the kitchen. You just have to realize it might take a little bit longer, right? Mm-hmm. You might have to let go of some of the perfection of how the vegetables are cut, right? But it's so fun for them. They usually want help when they're little, and you're giving them those skills lifelong. I'll talk with my patients who have older kids that are, you know, sort of preteens or teenagers about they're old enough to be making family dinner once a week. right? And that can often take the stress off the parent who's trying to improve health while helping this kid develop skills, right? You don't want to send an 18-year-old out of a house and they don't know how to make themselves dinner, right? Like, that is not going to go well. So I may have shared this before. My mom was pregnant when I was 10 years old and she was super sick. Like, she just couldn't make dinner a lot of nights. And so I learned how to make dinner. And it was one of the best things that's probably happened to me in my life, right? Because at a young age, I learned and was empowered and enjoyed cooking. And it became one of my jobs for our household. And I've met so many people who they never learned how to cook. Because either their parents didn't cook or their parents didn't want to teach them. You know, this can make the whole family's life easier if your kids can learn these skills.
Yes. And then just to add for the older kids, I'm finding, at least in Seattle, and I imagine hopefully it might be the case in other cities, where the YMCA, the community center, are having these teen cooking classes. I'm starting to see that pop up. I'm not sure if you noticed that in Denver, Dr. Frankavilla, where you've had these community centers, organizations like the Y even offer cooking classes for teens. I'm seeing that. Are you seeing
that? You know, in our area, they even have it for younger kids. So sometimes even the elementary school age kids can start having their cooking classes. And, you know, great, more entertainment for your kid. And they're learning like a really important life skill that is not taught in traditional school. And if it's not, if you don't have time to teach that in your home, then your kids may miss out on that. So yeah, I think using those community resources is a great idea too.
And there's that social connection, right? They're seeing their peers, they're getting involved. And usually I find that it's fun foods, like they're making like breakfast for dinner or something like that, or pizza. And pizza, I personally love pizza. And I always tell people, when you make it at home, you can kind of control how much cheese or how much oil you're using. So that's really where I try to get people to look at, like, make foods at home so you can control
the amount of things you put on it. I say that all the time. When you make your own food, you can control what's in it, right?
Right. So yes.
And, you know, pizza is a great explanation or example. I try not to label any foods completely good or bad, with the exception of sweet drinks like soda, which I don't really think have a role in nutrition at all. But pizza, for example, if you eat an entire pizza, that may not serve your nutrition goals. But if you have a slice or two of pizza and then you have a big salad or some roasted veggies or something to go with it, that can be a really balanced meal and you don't feel deprived. You don't feel like you're missing out, like you can never have pizza again.
Right. Yeah. I love that. So yeah, so nutrition, that's how I would approach it. And then physical activity. So moving as a family, you know, so many people are in front of their screens, adults included, right? So doing what you can to get out to the park with your kids, making a morning routine of, even if you don't have a backyard, you can do a lot of things indoors. And I know I just said no screens, but this is where screens can come in handy. There are a lot of YouTube kind of family workout routines with kids and adults. If you start to do a little search on that on YouTube, you'll see that. And then I'll do that with my kids sometimes and might as well do that too, where you just get on the floor and do floor exercises. So modeling to your kids by moving with them is important. And you know, sometimes you don't even need a lot of equipment, a jump rope, right? A basketball, even if you don't have a basketball hoop, doing bounce passes, arm circles as a family, running in place. Just kids just want to see their parents having fun with them. That's a big thing too.
Yeah, it's a great way to have fun with your kids, right? Yeah, we've been doing yoga videos. My son, he's almost eight. He's been enjoying those lately. Sometimes that's part of our wind down at the end of the day, just doing 10 minutes of yoga together. And they've seen me do that growing up. And now, you know, they can participate in that. And so I think modeling that, I think sometimes people will think of exercise or movement as a luxury. Like, you know, oh, I don't have time to go to the gym or like, I don't have the money to spend on the gym or things. And so number one, there's so many things that can be done in a small space. You don't always have to invest financially. You probably do have to invest time into moving. But I think you're role modeling, like you said, your kids will see that. So my kids have always seen my husband and I, you know, quote, workout is what we call it in our family, working out. And they want to do it because they've seen it. It looks cool to them, right? So they're like, you know, can I try a pull up? You know, oh, I can do a push up. And they do these goofy looking push ups and stuff. And so if you're one of those people who's so busy taking care of your kids and your family, realize that investing time for movement for yourself is role modeling for your kids. It's not selfish, even though you feel like you're maybe not giving your kids attention for 20 or 30 minutes. You're actually role modeling behavior for them, that taking care of our body with movement is part of having a healthy lifestyle. It's part of taking care of our body.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And then the third pillar I mentioned, stress management. So showing kids at a young age healthy kind of ways to manage stress. We all deal with stress, right? Good stress, bad stress. So with my kids, you know, we're really big on, you know, journaling. Well, I have two kids, 5 and 7. The 5-year-old still practicing her reading, but the 7-year-old writing our feelings for the day. You know, how are we feeling? And they'll see me with my journal, and I have my son go get his, and he'll write how his day went. And even in school, they journal, right? So seeing me journal makes them want to journal too. And we do some Saturday mornings like art therapy, where I actually will go, and there's some local artists in Seattle who sell these canvases for kids, pre-made sketches. So either ice cream or a little kid on it, or somebody a beach scene with a little child, and we'll paint together and just talk about how we're feeling. So it doesn't always have to look like sitting in a therapist chair. I'm all for therapy. I'm not saying therapy, traditional therapy is bad, but sometimes stress reduction looks like journaling, looks like art, right? Looks like going for a walk in nature. Forest bathing is that's a new term for it nowadays, or not a new term, but a term that's often used, forest bathing, you know, taking a nature walk. So
Nature walk. Yeah. So modeling that. And then it sounds like with the journaling, it's like even naming the feelings, right?
Yep.
That's something that younger kids, even older kids, like need to help identify, right? Like, what am I feeling? And sometimes as adults, we need to, right? We just have a sense of being uneasy. And am I stressed? Am I anxious? Am I tired? Right. Am I excited? Like labeling those feelings, and then we can do something with them.
Right. If you can't get the words out, draw. I'll tell my 5-year-old who's still practicing her reading, just draw how you're feeling. You know, sometimes she'll draw a rainbow. I'm mad at mommy, so I'm going to draw you small. I'm going to be big. Like, okay, right? Like, so these are very real things. We're teaching them how to get these feelings out, though, at a young age, which is so important. Yeah.
So on the flip side, a thing I'll see with my patients is that they are excited to make lifestyle changes for themselves. They're planning to change how they eat or increase movement or work on some of these things. But there are other members of the family, whether that's their children, a spouse, an elderly parent who lives with them, who is not on board with making those changes. They don't want to change their food. They don't want to move. They like their screen time.
Right.
So what do you suggest for people who, you know, are living in a family unit, but are wanting to make changes and the rest of the family is not on board, or maybe for some reason not able to make some of these changes?
Yeah, that's a great question. I, you know, easier said than done, but I always start off by telling my patients, you got to stay the course, because at the end of the day, this is your journey. You only have one body. You're responsible for your body. And I don't even use myself as an example. I've been primarily plant-based for 25 years. So when I was 15 years old, I started being plant-based. 15, oh my gosh, wow. It's like it's 26 years now I think about it. Everybody thought I was crazy. My meat-eating parents and siblings, they thought I was crazy, but they let me do my thing, right? And then fast forward to now, more people are plant-based. I'm not the weirdo anymore in the family when it comes to that. So my point is, stay the course. Hopefully people will catch on. And if they never do, that's okay. You have to remember your why. Know your why. Remember your why. So I do a lot of SMART goals with my patients. You have to remember SMART goals, you know, specifically.
We have a podcast episode on SMART goals.
I love it. Love it. Love it.
Episode 12 or something. But
yes,
there's a whole podcast episode on SMART goals if you haven't checked it out.
Yes. SMART goal. I always ask people, what's your why? That'll keep you focused on those nights when I have patients tell me, you know, I feel like my partner's trying to sabotage my journey. You know, they keep buying the things. I tell them I can't eat. I tell them, you know, sometimes people have their own stuff they're trying to work through, but focus on you. I'm your accountability partner. When that happens, message me and get it all out. And so, and if you have a moment when you kind of dip into some of that, that's okay. We can get back on track. So not shaming people, giving them space to quote unquote slip up a bit, and encouraging them. Because I think when you do a lot of, how could you do that? Or why did you do that? Or remember, when you come across really like intense about it, that's a turnoff, right? Which is why I like more the inclusive language around plant-based eating, like being more plant-forward. That way, if someone isn't 100%, there's no shame around that. They can still feel open to me, because most of my patients aren't 100% plant-based, even though I am, right? And I love all my patients. I just want people to all make steps to eat more whole foods, right? Whatever that looks like.
I definitely want to talk about plant-based eating, but I think what you said at the beginning there was really powerful, that I think you said this is like your journey, right? And you have to listen to do what's right for your body, right?
Yes.
We all only get one body. No one is going to care more about our own body than we do. And so we have to be on that journey. And so if there are those people that are sabotaging us intentionally or not, or, you know, having foods or temptations or behaviors that are not good for us, coming back to our why. Why is it important that you're quitting smoking, right? We didn't talk a ton about the substances, but why is that important? Well, your spouse or your family member may have different goals. They're not there yet. But if you have this new grandbaby and you want to live longer and you think smoking cessation, quitting smoking is one of the things that's going to get you there, keep coming back to that, that why, right? So that's really, really powerful stuff that even though it's very nice for your whole family to be able to do these things together, at the end of the day, we all are on our own journey and we have to take care of our own bodies.
Yep. Yep. I love that.
Okay. So let's talk about what being plant-based means, because it can mean a ton of different things. Can you walk us through what some of the different ways of being plant-based can look like? Because when people say that, it can mean a lot of different things. So what are some of the ways that people can be plant-based? What does that mean?
Yeah, love that. Love that. So first of all, I love it because it's super inclusive. You can be 100%, you can be 10%, you know, it's a spectrum really. But I really tell my patients, anyone who wants to make an attempt to eat more whole foods that, you know, grew out the ground or that are plant-based is what I, that falls underneath. And they might find that they're eating seafood twice a week or beef once a week or whatnot. But before they were eating beef daily, you know? So for them, that's a step forward in that journey, right? But you can be anywhere. It's a continuum. There was a season when I was not 100% plant-based. I don't have any shame around saying that. I think a lot of people get really like, oh, are you vegan? Are you not vegan? That's why I don't use the word vegan a lot. If I'm going to a restaurant, I want to make sure that there's food options for me. I'll say I eat a vegan diet, but I never say that I'm vegan. I like to just say I'm plant-based or I'm plant-forward, right?
Right. People can become like, I think one of the turnoffs for some people is that people can be kind of zealots about
and very judgy and you feel very
vegan.
Like,
and sometimes that's because the person is doing that way of eating for more environmental or political or ethical reasons. And so being very strict for perhaps ethical reasons is very different than eating in a way that is important to your body or religious reason, right? If you are eating a certain way based on your religion, that is very different than eating in a different way to serve your body and your health.
Right, right. I love that. But yes, for me, I'm very transparent. It's my body runs the best off of plants. So it's very health focused for me, right? But if a patient of mine wants to learn how to incorporate more fiber into their diet, wants to learn how to eat more whole grains, they're coming to me for that coaching. They may still, you know, go out and eat all types of animals, and that's fine. I'm just supporting them in that need around why incorporate more fiber, because before they were barely getting any fiber and they were having tummy issues and they were constipated and things like that. So I just try to meet people where they're at and not be preachy about it. That's another thing. Like I get a lot of feedback from my patients and even folks who I meet and who have read my kids' book. Like they love how it's not preachy. They were nervous at first when I first started promoting my book, which we'll talk about. People were like, oh, we don't eat, we're not vegan. I said, great. Most people who buy the book aren't vegan. That's your ideal, you know, reader, right?
Even for me, like, you know, whenever someone wants to talk about plant-based diet, when I invited you to be a guest on the show, I was like, you're not going to be like a zealot about this, right? Like, because some people are, and it's really off-putting, right? It's not all or nothing. And that's not realistic for most people.
Yeah. I have two kids. One is 100% plant-based. The other is, I call her more of a flexitarian. She's a very strong-willed little girl, you know, so I don't make her meat, but if we go out to eat and my husband does eat meat, not that much, but he does eat meat. They may have a chicken, something or another, you know, so even myself, like I like to tell people this so that they know that I'm meeting people where they are. Yeah. So as an author, as a physician, it's important for me to share that with people too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that there's not very good consistent nutrition data, because getting nutrition data is very complicated. Mm-hmm. But one of the trends that is fairly hard to argue is that eating more plants, eating more whole food plants is good for our health. I think we can, there are people who, you know, will argue for carnivore diets and other things out there, but I think that it's pretty good evidence that eating more plants is good for almost everyone's health.
Right. Right. Yeah, absolutely. I have yet to read anything that says it's detrimental. What I will say though, there are certain things you can't get from a plant-based diet. Vitamin B12. So you have to supplement, right? Make sure you're getting enough of that. Make sure you're eating a variety of foods. People forget that Oreos and French fries and beers, that's all vegan. If you just eat those things, you're going to have a deficiency in a lot of different things. You're not going to feel good, right? But eating variety, eat your vegetables, eat a variety, eat the rainbow. Those are kind of my big things I tell people.
Yeah.
Right?
So. Yes. And I think I have an episode where we talk, I think it's called like, what's the best nutrition plan or what's the best diet? And, you know, I walk through a lot of the different common ways that people like to structure their eating, plant-based, paleo, keto. And when any of those things are done well and in a healthful way, they involve eating more whole plants, right? Even keto or paleo, where people think of meat a lot, really a foundation of those ways of eating are eating a lot more whole foods and eating a lot of those as low calorie vegetables. Mm-hmm. And so I think that the plus of doing that is it pushes other stuff off your plate. So
right.
I, for most of my patients, although, you know, if someone's had bariatric surgery or is on a really highly effective weight loss medicine, their plan may need to be different. But if you focus on getting a bunch of vegetables, whole grains, beans, legumes on your plate as a priority, it will naturally push off things like French fries or yep. chicken tenders, right? Like
right,
those
right.
sections either get pushed off the plate or they get smaller.
Right. Yeah, because these whole plant foods are so nutrient dense, right? So they kind of filling up your belly so you feel full faster and all the things. So yeah.
But
yeah.
So you kind of started to touch on what like a not great vegan or plant-based diet could look like. So
yeah.
What is that like? Like, because I'm sure you've met these patients where they come in and they're like, oh, I'm vegan or I'm completely yes. plant-based.
Yes.
But it's maybe not like the healthiest diet or yeah. a weight loss diet.
Yeah. Yeah. I think of one patient when he first joined my practice, maybe about a year ago or so, we got his cholesterol panel as part of his routine last for his physical. And he at first was really surprised that his LDL, his bad cholesterol was pretty high. And then I did a kind of an intense deep dive. And he said, I'm plant-based 100%. And then I asked him about coconut oil. He's like, oh yeah, I use that all the time. I drizzle it on everything. I put coconut oil. Like there are some doctors who are like, coconut oil's awful. I'm not like that. You just have to use it in moderation because it's very high saturated
yeah.
fat, right? So that was the thing. And then we had some language around, you know, how much is a serving around that, things like that. That's one extreme. Another extreme is folks who are just potatoes, fried food, lots of takeout. They're as you probably have noticed, Dr. Francavilla, the processed vegan food market has really skyrocketed. Have you noticed? Sure. Yeah, yeah.
And that's what happens with these when diets become a trend. So I'm in Denver and I'm a CrossFitter. So the paleo diet is really popular with my community or was. And then because it was so popular and there was so much buzz around it, all these processed paleo foods came out. And that like is completely defeats the point of paleo, right. which is like, how did people used to eat? Well, they right. ate whole foods, right?
Right?
Like there were no almond flour pancakes, which are one of my favorite foods, by the way, but there were no almond flour pancakes in the caveman days, right?
Like right.
that was not an option. And so, you know, when we're eating these processed foods, it doesn't matter if they're plant-based or not. When we eat too much processed or ultra processed foods, that's not great for our health. So it doesn't matter if it's plant-based on it, you know, plant-based mac and cheese is still not probably a health food.
Yeah. You hit it. Trends. People follow trends. Marketing. It's all about, I feel like I see the word vegan on everything from hair care products to like clothing,
right,
it's just
right.
everywhere. So I'm very aware it's very trendy. So I tell people at the end, they read your labels, look for whole things you can pronounce, you know.
It's like gluten-free. Like someone will be yes. like, it's gluten-free chili.
Gluten-free.
I'm like, chili should be gluten-free.
Right.
Like there's no
right.
wheat in chili. Like why are we advertising that the chili right. is gluten-free? And same thing with plant-based, right? You're like, wait, there's shampoo that has animals?
You'll see that so much on beauty products these days, I'm noticing, right? You know, anyway, yeah.
So, you know, and I think that this is the nutrition theme I come back to more and more with my patients is, and on the podcast is whole foods, right? Eating right. real food that you can recognize. I did a podcast episode on ultra processed foods and that you just eat more of them. You get more calories out of them and they have less nutritional value, right? Like, you know, whether we're plant-based or plant forward, eating less processed food is huge. So eating the real plant, eating the salad, eating the brown rice, eating the bean, not eating the packaged food that's labeled plant-based.
Right, right. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about your book. You've mentioned it a little bit and I'd love to hear about it. So it's called Ayomide and Shea's Kitchen, A Kid's
yes.
Guide to Plant-Based Nutrition from A to Z. Tell us
yes.
about the book and what it's like and features your kids in cartoon form, it looks
yes.
like.
Yes, yes. It's such fun. It's such fun. So this is my passion project, right? So as a family physician, I've been practicing for 10 years now, and I've just seen the trend. I think you've seen it too. I'm sure you've seen it too. Dr. Brangavilla, where so many kids are turning to adults who have chronic diseases, you know, and so many families don't have enough time to cook together. So there's a lot of on-the-go eating. So I wanted to write a book for kids, but it was really for families because the parents are often reading the books to the kids, to show them the why behind plant-based eating by introducing terms like, for example, when I go into it, you know, starts off pretty like, okay, it's for apple. It talks about apples, but then you get into it. I'm talking about fiber and why fiber is important, you know, energy, how you need energy from various macronutrients. I don't use that word. I say, I'll just kind of read a line from
yes,
E.
It's the alphabet. Yes, read
so E is for energy. We need energy to learn and run at school. Plant-based proteins, fats, and carbohydrates provide great fuel. Right. So then I'll read one more little page. G is for glucose. We prefer this simple sugar found in fruits that nature grew. Need some ideas? Try plums, peaches, and dates. All three are sweet and good for you too. So it goes from A to Z, listing all various foods and different nutrition facts so that it's educational, not preachy, letting people know the why behind things. And then a lot of times there's so much confusion about plant-based eating. That's why I wanted to write this book too, to show like you can't get calcium from things like broccoli and bok choy, you know. You can get iron from plant food. So that was really the why behind it. And my kids, you know, as a mom, I want my kids, especially my kids, little black kids, want to have that representation too. Was really important to me. So I put them in the book and named it after them.
Love it.
But yeah, I'm just excited to spread the word about
I love it. Yeah. And I think that introducing food as its nutrition value. Like, why is it important? Because we're probably in the same generation. A lot of us were raised in the 90s that like we had to restrict food, eat less food. Like that was the solution to weight and the obesity epidemic was eat less food. And as a result, there's a lot of packaged foods, diet foods that are not always serving people. And so we need to sometimes re-educate ourselves as adults, but certainly for our next generation, talk about why we need to eat. We have to eat food. So let's eat things that are of use to our body, right? That fuel our body and that give it the things it needs, the micronutrients, the calcium, the vitamin D, the fish oil, that, you know, the things our bodies need. Yeah. And I think that that's a way to make food positive for kids instead of being like, oh, don't eat that. Like, don't eat ice cream.
There's no, don't eat this in the book at all. And that's very intentional. And I'll say it. Okay. I never say if you eat meat, it's bad. Right. Because one, that would, half my practice would just leave. And my husband and my daughter, they eat meat occasionally, but I've read some vegan books for kids that were, it's very, that kind of shaming. And I was like, I wouldn't want to read this, you know, to a child. So that it was very, I was trying to address needs out there, right? Like the why behind plant-based nutrition, not being preachy, not turning off people, right? It was very, very.
Whether for adults or for kids, I don't want people following nutrition advice because it's like a rule or things have just been labeled black or white.
Yeah.
It's like what serves your body, right? Like what is serving your health goals? And for some people, I definitely eat animal products. I eat meat. I think for it serves my body, at least at this point in my life. Yeah. But I also try to eat a lot of plants, right? Like I eat plants first. Most of my day is plant-based, but I eat meat for most of my dinners. Yeah. And that's what works for my body, right? But I've talked about on the podcast before, I don't eat very much dairy. Dairy does not serve my body. And I've been able to identify specific reasons it doesn't serve my body. I encourage lots of my patients to eat dairy. It is a great source of calcium and protein for lots of my patients. They eat it. And so I think it is so much like what makes sense for your body. And so I love, thank you for not being a preachy vegan.
Yes. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, if people want to connect with you, find your resources, how can they connect with you?
Yes, thank you. So on Facebook, Margaret Toalawi, MD. So just my first and last name with MD, that'll pop up on Facebook. And then my website is margarettoalawimd.com. So pretty easy. Again, first, last name, and then the MD for medical doctor. And that website will lead you to my books and also my two different practices. And then on Instagram, I have my author page. So author Margaret Toalawi, and then my primary care on Instagram is Nurture Well Center. And then my skin business, I have skincare products as well. Skin Stat, STATMD. So yeah.
Those awesome. Are just a few places.
Just a few places.
We'll try to make sure all of those end up in the show notes.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. Those were some awesome topics we got into today. Yes. And, you know, I sometimes like to give homework on this podcast, and I bet I have given this one before, but I think, you know, great homework is like, figure out how you can eat more real whole plants in your diet, not the veggie straws, right? But like, how can you get in some more plants into your diet? And those will just push out some of the processed foods, some of the calorie dense foods. So, you know, eat more plants. Like, I feel like that is always good advice.
Eat more plants. What a good word to end on. Thank you so much, Dr. Francavilla.
All right. Until next week, take care. Thank you for listening to the Dr. Francavilla Show, where we learn about all things related to weight and health. If you love this podcast, make sure to leave those 5-star reviews and share this podcast with a friend or loved one. If you have a topic about weight and health you want me to tackle, head over to the website, thedrfrancavillashow.com, to submit your question. And make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss next week's episode. Take care.